Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The times we had, oh, when the wind would blow with rain or snow, were not all bad. We put our features where they had to go.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Zach Condon, frontman of the band Beirut, recently burst onto the indie rock scene thanks to a glowing track review of this song on Pitchfork Media. He was the subject of major buzz even before the album was officially released on May 9th. Within a month of that release, the band, Beirut, had its debut at the Knitting Factory, a packed show at the Mercury Lounge and Joe's Pub, and will be hitting the stage at the Bowery Ballroom on July 21st. Now, for most bands, overnight success is a dream come true, but today we'll look at the good, the bad, and the ugly side of overnight fame. Zach Condon of the group Beirut is here with me in the studio. Zach, welcome to Soundcheck.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And joining us on the phone is Lyle Heisen. He's a veteran of the record industry. He runs the licensing division of Bank Robber Music, which pitches songs to film, TV, and ad companies. And he previously worked at Matador Records for 10 years. Lyle, thank you for being with us as well.
No problem.
Let me start with you, Zach. You were quoted in an interview after your Knitting Factory debut as saying, "Our first show was a disaster, a total disaster." Why?
It was. You know, the pressure was on. There was 200 people there. We were expecting about 15 and working with the worst of equipment imaginable. And we had no idea what we were in for at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it all fell apart on stage just like that.
So you had some songs, but you didn't have the kind of the stage experience, the performing chops together?
Or? Almost none whatsoever. That was literally our first show and perhaps 2 weeks into the band being formed.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, you know, what is the fallout of this kind of instant notoriety? I mean, you moved from New Mexico to New York. You founded this band, and then like 2 weeks later, you know, there's hundreds of people packing the club. Has it been a mixed blessing?
I still feel like I'm very much a private citizen. I really haven't seen any of the ups or downs yet, as far as I know, except for, yeah, after the show, you see it written about everywhere, and you realize that every step I take as a musician at this point is going to be noticed.
Right.
And is in the public eye.
And you're 20?
20, yeah, I'm 20.
You're 20 years old, so yeah. This is all happening, you know.
Before it's supposed to, I suppose.
I guess. Maybe we can ask Lyle Heisen to weigh in on this. I mean, Lyle, you've managed a lot of bands. Is it unwise to kind of take youngsters and kind of thrust them into the spotlight before they're really ready for it?
Well, it's usually not up to the artist, you know. I mean, if it's happening, it's not like the artist can say, you know what, I need some more time to get my act together. I mean, in the case of, unfortunately, with these days, the way things are going with the internet and all that stuff, like he just said, every move he makes is now being documented. Even if he plays a out-of-town warm-up show in Connecticut, there'll be some blog out there that will write about it, and if he stinks, people will know.
But it's funny, you know, Lyle, you mentioned that the artist can't really control it. I was struck earlier this year, you know, the whole Arctic Monkeys buzz, the buzz band from the UK. I was struck that their manager actually kind of addressed the media at some point in January and basically said, "Can you all just cool it for a bit? let's not play so much of the record right now." I mean, it seems like there was on the band's side in that case at least some awareness that, you know, it isn't all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah, but it made for another press release that everyone took notice of. So, I mean, everything always draws its way back to the artist. And if you say, you know, it's like the paparazzi kind of thing, just go away, leave us alone, more people will want to pay attention and see what they're doing.
Mm. Zach, what's your experience been with the fans and your record label in the wake of these initial gigs that you've been doing? I mean, are you concerned about how they're reacting?
Like I said, it's all so new. I really haven't. I feel like I haven't experienced anything yet. And maybe this is it. Maybe nothing changes.
Well, I mean, the story that I've heard is basically that you went from playing in your bedroom to playing a packed show at Joe's Pub.
Oh, yeah.
Is that how it happened? Was this genuinely an overnight phenomenon?
It was overnight. It used to be five friends coming to see me karaoke to my CD in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and now it's, yeah, a packed house, of course. It's kind of nerve-wracking.
Mm. Were you surprised that your music kind of struck a chord? Because, you know, we can listen to some of it, and as people hear it, it's not what you normally expect from an indie rock band. The sound is a bit different. Was this, I mean, you know, did it just come out of left field that people were reacting this way?
I had no idea this was going to happen. This is an album I recorded a year ago in my bedroom. I was expecting practically nothing. I thought it was a good demo. I thought it was a good starting point.
Zach Condon is the front man of the group Beirut, and this is the band Beirut. That is Zach Condon and the rest of the group Beirut from their breakthrough debut album, The Gulag Orchestra. And Zach, I mean, you know, to me this has the sound a little bit of the group Neutral Milk Hotel, which certainly has that you've listened to.
It's something I grew up on, actually. I mean, I think it must have been 15 around the time that I first heard that album. So I'm guessing at this point it's very much a part of my subconscious musically.
But then there's this weird sort of Eastern European Balkan thing happening, which, again, is like unexpected, and yet people are responding to.
Yeah, that's my newfound love in music right now. It's what I've been listening to for the past couple of years, kind of obsessively.
Mm-hmm.
So
how were you, quote-unquote, discovered, and how did all this buzz start?
Well, actually, I was discovered by Jeremy Barnes in Albuquerque.
Jeremy Barnes from?
From Neutral Milk Hotel.
From the band, Neutral Milk Hotel.
He plays in a band called Hawken & Hacksaw now, where he plays Balkan music, more or less. And I guess word got around that I was doing the same kind of stuff in Albuquerque, and we played a show together, and he eventually turned the record on to Ben Goldberg, who runs the label.
Mm, okay. Let me bring Lyle Heisen back in. Lyle, in your experience, how does buzz get generated? I mean, has that changed? Has that mechanism changed with the internet and stuff?
Well, you know, everyone's looking for that magic, you know, bullet that will be the one thing they need to get a buzz going for a band. And right now everyone just is all excited that it's all about, you know, blogs, and that's where all the A&R guys are looking, and also MySpace and all that mishigas. But, you know, in 6 months or a year it'll be something else. And last year or 2 years ago it was getting a song in a commercial, and before that it was just getting your song played on Mars. I mean, they're always looking for something that's the one thing. But nothing beats the old school work ethic of, you know, just like he was playing a gig. You just go out there, play your shows, take it to the stage, as Parliament said, and just prove that you are the best band, and somebody will find you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody found him except Ben Goldberg, you know, and now everyone is trying to say that they found him, but Ben was the one with the ears, and he found him.
Right. Lyle Heisen runs the licensing division of Bank Robber Music. Now, you mentioned a couple of years ago the way to build buzz was to get your song played on a TV commercial. You've done a lot of that work, licensing songs for TV and commercials and film. Is that still kind of a viable path to success?
Even back then, everyone was excited that this is the one thing that will break your band, is if you get someone in a car singing to your song. And that only happened a couple of times, and I've licensed, you know, lots of songs to commercials and had bands on TV shows performing. That was another thing last year. That was if you had your band playing on the OC, that was another instant stardom thing. But there's so many examples of it not working, you know, where the band did play and no one reacted, or sales went up a little bit, or sales stayed the same. And so it wasn't really the secret formula to success. It was just another easy thing to try to throw out there. But it will change again.
Right. Zach, if someone came to you and said, you know, we think this track from the Beirut record would, you know, sell a lot of soap flakes, would that be okay by you?
I hope so.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, there's no longer the indie DIY credibility thing doesn't seem to be so much at stake anymore, and that's fine with me.
Yeah. Lyle, you mentioned MySpace. There are a couple of cautionary tales of alleged bans on MySpace. Do you know the story of this fake UK rock band that, you know, there was all this buzz about? And
yeah, this is just another prank, you know. I found the best thing I've gotten out of MySpace is that it's eliminated the process of people sending me demos. You know, I was like, oh, just send me your link and I'll listen to it there. But
that's actually where Ben heard the album was on MySpace for the first time, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, and that's and for that it is a good thing. But now it's just becoming another major label or, you know, big indie label or whatever marketing tool, and it will fall to the wayside over time.
Right. This band Hope Against Hope, if you're familiar with that story, they're basically a fake band that put some demos up on MySpace, and they actually somebody was trying to sign them. The guy who discovered Oasis was trying to sign this band that did not exist. So,
and they turned it up.
For all the stuff that MySpace can do, it cannot make a fake band materialize, apparently.
Right.
So that went nowhere.
I'm surprised they didn't quickly become a real band and take the cake and take all the filthy lucre that comes with it.
Lyle, how often does this happen, that we get a genuine kind of instant success happening in music?
It's hard to, you know, exactly put a number on it, but I mean, over the years, it happens. Surprisingly, almost every year or so, there's at least a couple of bands or three bands that instantly just come out of nowhere, and everyone is claiming to be the next Beatles.
Right. Last year, the Brooklyn-based group Clap Your Hands Say Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same thing happened to them, Zach, as happened to your band. There was a review online at Pitchfork Media. Mm-hmm. And suddenly sales of the record were going through the roof, and this song now getting a bit of traction. It's a year later, so at this point you can't say it's overnight, but still pretty quick success.
Yeah.
And they're digging in and getting a bit more. This song is called The Skin of My Yellow Country Teeth from the band Clap Your Hands Say Yeah. The band is Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah, and we're speaking with Lyle Heiser. He runs the licensing division at Bank Robber Music, pitching songs to film, TV, and ad companies. And we're speaking with Zach Condon, the frontman of the indie rock band called Beirut, who, like Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah, are experiencing a wave of indie rock acclaim and popularity. Lyle, is it just an indie rock phenomenon? Don't we see the same thing happening in rap and other forms of music, too?
Well, everyone's trying to make everybody be the next big thing, so everybody will just keep pushing it until, you know, something breaks through. I mean, Beirut are not the only band that have gotten, you know, a glowing review from Pitchfork over the past 6 months. It's just that, for some reason, that, you know, what he's doing has really connected with people that will take it to another level.
Zach, why the name Beirut?
Beirut? Well, I have a cliche that I tend to say when I get caught on that question, which is it's East meets West. It's supposed to be the Paris of the Middle East,
right?
Which fits. Actually, I just pulled it out of a hat, though. I wanted to be named after a city, and a foreign one, for that matter.
All right. Yeah. And the East-West thing just kind of seemed to make sense after the fact.
It sounds great now, doesn't it?
Yeah. All right. Very good. Lyle, after all of the initial wave of buzz, How difficult is it to make something substantial and something lasting out of this?
I mean, that all falls onto the artist. You know, if they're really here to make their statement and prove that they belong and that they will last, they will do it. You know, a crappy gig aside, you know, it's up to Beirut to, you know, to carry on and put out a follow-up great record and make the live show even better, and then we'll see if people are going to stay with them, you know, and the other bands are already falling to the wayside that were claimed to be the next big thing. It's kind of like the Michael Jordan thing. Hey, that guy's a new Michael Jordan, and then they fall away, and you know, the bands, you know, I'm trying not to curse, so you know.
Thanks for that, Lyle.
It is really tough for me, but you know, the good ones will rise to the top.
Right.
You know.
So do you think just as an industry, or does it extend to the fans as well, that there's just it's too much of this eagerness for the next big thing?
But that's always been the case, you know. Even back in the day of fanzines, you know, and. You know, where they set the tempo. I mean, everyone always just wants to claim, you know, it goes into fashion and goes into art and goes into movies that they've got the next big thing. And, you know, so everyone will, you know, and everyone as a musician, all the musicians believe that they are the next big thing. So it's just a matter of if more than five people will ever pay attention.
Zach, are you guys the next big thing?
Well, I suppose we'll see about that.
Well, you started by saying that, you know, the first gig was a disaster. How are they going now, and what are the plans for the next record?
Well, you know, the funny thing is our last show was also a disaster, but that wasn't our fault. The PA broke down on us in the middle of soundcheck, actually. But we've played a couple, I would think, really successful shows where I got a full 10-piece orchestra on stage and played, you know, the album almost exactly the way it is on record, and I think that went beautifully, like at North 6, and yeah.
In Brooklyn, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so July 21st, you'll be at the Bowery Ballroom. That's a big stage.
It's
a lot of people, and, you know.
I've got a couple jealous friends in New Mexico right now.
Uh-huh. And will there be a killer second record to build on the first, or haven't you gotten that far yet?
I haven't gotten that far yet. I'm waiting for the next...
That's another
focus.
Overnight, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, the first alleged overnight success has taken Beirut from Zach Condon's bedroom to packed houses here in New York. We've been speaking with Zach Condon from Beirut and Lyle Heisen. Lyle Heisen, who runs the licensing division at Bank Robber Music. And to the two of you, thanks very much for being with us this afternoon. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
In a moment, from Kyrgyzstan to Kansas City, we'll hear the success story of the jazz pianist known as Eldar. And we'll hear a live performance from him as well. That's coming up on Soundcheck.